Today, why retirement needs a reboot. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. The Credit Suisse Research Institute recently released a report, Rethinking Retirement. They highlighted a ticking demographic time bomb, which needs to be disarmed before it goes off. At its heart is the fact that retirement has become an integral part of our life biography. After education and years of work comes well-deserved rest. Many people tend to take this rigid three-stage structure of life for granted, as if it had been in the nature of every human being for a long time. However, this concept of retirement as a formally defined end of working life only came into being in the 19th century, when the first forms of financial support for the elderly funded by the state were introduced. Until then, lifelong work had been a reality for many generations. The report suggests that the traditional concept of the three-stage life cycle, education, working life and retirement, should be reconsidered and increasing provisions made for new forms of work, for example, part-time or temporary employment, and further education that can ease the transition into a longer working life. People are getting older by the decade. Both developed and developing countries will face the problems associated with an aging population. While developed countries are seeing the impact first, the developing world will go through this process at an even faster pace. As a result of declining fertility rates and increasing life expectancy, the proportion of retirees in the population has risen. The share of people aged 65 and over in the developed world has increased from 7.7% in 1950 to over 19% today, and is estimated to reach roughly 27% by 2050. In contrast, the ratio stood at 3.8% in developing regions in 1950 and is projected to increase to 7.4% in 2020. And they say over the next 70 years, developing regions will experience an even stronger increase in the share of people aged 65 and over than that experienced in developed regions. Between 1950 and 2020, what has so far primarily been an issue in developed countries is thus increasingly becoming a global phenomenon. After Europe and North America, Eastern Asia is one of the world's fastest aging populations. Population projections suggest that by 2030, the total number of people aged 65 and over will surpass the number of people between 10 and 25 years of age. Japan's old age population, 65 plus, already outweighs the younger generation, 10 to 25 years. South Korea and Singapore will follow between 2021 and 2023. China by 2032. And China in particular is suffering from the effect of its one-child policy. Although the government officially ended this policy in 2015, changing living conditions in cities and the sharp rise in prices for housing and education makes it difficult for many couples to have more than one child. And in Australia, at the current trends, we will cross the old-young Rubicon in 2035. Then there will be more people aged 65 years plus compared with the population of those aged 20 to 25 years, despite our high levels of net migration. In addition to the increase in the old age population, demographic aging is also apparent in a stagnating or even declining working age population. In Europe, the working age population, currently defined as those aged 15 to 64 year olds, peaked in 2010 and has been rapidly shrinking ever since. This is also true for Eastern Asia and, at a slightly lower pace, Northern America and Oceania. The only continent where the working age population should continue to grow over the coming decades is Africa. One aspect that already influences the development of the world population in certain countries is the retirement wave of the baby boomer generation. According to the most common definition, the baby boomers comprise the generations born between the end of World War II and the middle of the 1960s. This striking period of particularly high birth rate left its mark on the age pyramid of several developed countries, mostly the ones involved in the world conflict. In Germany, due to the consequences of the war, this phenomenon only began in the mid-1950s, lasting until the end of the 1960s. In Japan, birth rates rose in two waves, first between 1947 and 49, and later in the first half of the 1970s. In South Korea, the baby boom set in after the Korean War and lasted till 1963. The baby boomers of the post-war era are now retiring. Their transition from the world of work to retirement began back in 2010 and will reach its peak on average around 2030. Over these two decades, roughly 370 million people in the developed world will have reached normal retirement age. Depending on the definition of the baby boomers cohort, the retirement wave unfolds slightly differently from country to country. But along with this occurrence, demographic aging is now entering a decisive phase everywhere in developed countries. The combination of significant age cohorts with rising life expectancy on the one hand, and successor cohorts of much smaller size due to lower birth rates on the other, is giving rise to clearly discernible imbalances of an ever-increasing nature. Particularly affected by this development is the pension system, where an increasing number of pensioners contrasts with a continuously declining number of financial contributors. To compound matters, benefits have to be paid out for a longer period of time, but the labour market will also have to face the repercussions of this wave of retirement. Without progress in productivity, this development will also have a negative impact on economic growth. And most countries face aging populations, a low interest rate environment, and resulting challenges to ensure financial security in retirement. And although many countries plan to raise the normal retirement age in the future, people will, on average, spend an increasing part of their lives in retirement, meaning a larger part of life expectancy gains will likely be spent in retirement rather than working. Some countries have a set schedule to increase normal retirement age, like Denmark, Estonia, Italy, although it was suspended until 2026, and the Netherlands. The link is 1-to-1, meaning 1 year increase in life expectancy leads to 1 year increase in the retirement age, implying that all life expectancy gains will be spent working. Finland and Portugal increase the retirement age by 2/3 of life expectancy gains. And given that much of the economic growth that we've had over the past 50 years is consumer-led, it's worth noting that older consumers on average consume less and buy different types of goods. But as worrying, the financial resources required to support an adequate retirement are not being saved, whether in a public or private system, by many future retirees, low interest rates, and the need to pay more for accommodation through life in a low-income environment creates a pincer movement, meaning that there will be more financially stressed people in retirement, and those in rental accommodation in particular will be feeling the pressure. And I'll add that there is an age discrimination in play, with those aged 55 years and older finding it harder or impossible to find work, as employers prefer younger and perhaps more agile workers, and where the age pyramid drives seniority in firms. So the Credit Suisse Research Institute suggested a number of options to make pension systems more sustainable. First, they said, people should be encouraged or forced to save more for retirement during their working life. Great for those who can, but many cannot. And current savings returns are lower than they've been for a long time. Financial markets are fickle, and risks might have to be taken to simply accumulate enough. I have to say the Australian super system seems to be performing well for the financial services industry players, thanks to fat fees and growing balances. But as the Productivity Commission recently showed, performance is not transparent, choice is limited, and people are not getting the full benefits that they should. So I think this sector needs a major rethink. I've argued this for some time. See my post, What's Super About Superannuation? Second, they said additional funds could be mobilised by increasing taxes. However, given already high taxation in many OECD countries, this approach is unlikely to provide a solution, especially if negative work incentives from higher taxation or tax avoidance are considered. And here we face the dilemma that governments around the world are reducing the taxes paid by companies. Many pay no tax at all, thanks to sophisticated avoidance schemes and tax breaks. So households are bearing the brunt. And this is another area which needs attention, because without it, the tax take will continue to stall as incomes stall. Third, raising the retirement age would be an obvious approach to reducing funding gaps and could be complemented by incentives to encourage people to work longer. But this is causing grief in a number of countries. For example, in France, President Emmanuel Macron gave up an effort to make 64 the baseline age for full retirement benefits so he could push other reforms through which have been on the agenda for a quarter of a century. Fourth, people might have to accept to have lower pensions in the future in order to guarantee long-term sustainability of the system. Typically, a combination of measures will be required to ensure that future pensioners continue to enjoy the standards of living they're accustomed to. But this is tricky, as the cost of living continues to rise a lot faster than the official figures, and we know from our surveys that many households are now entering retirement with a mortgage still around their neck. The amount needed for a reasonable retirement is also underestimated by many. For example, an estimated comfortable retirement income of $60,000 a year for a couple for 25 years at 2% net returns needs more than $1 million of capital if eligible for the pension, or $1.97 million if not. This drops to $640,000 at 5% with an eligible pension, or more than $1 million without. For a 35-year income at 2%, you would need $3.5 million without state pension eligibility. One option would be for governments to reward people to continue to save for longer and draw their pensions or superannuation later. And in addition, the OEC recently listed 11 recommendations to strengthen longer working careers. Rewarding work and later retirement would include increasing incentives for older workers to continue working, decreasing incentives for older workers to retire early, and limiting the use of publicly funded early retirement schemes, especially for old age workers still in good shape. They then spoke about discouraging mandatory retirement by employers by encouraging employers to retain and hire old age workers, tackling age discrimination in recruitment, reducing labour costs and enhancing productivity for older workers, eliminating special employment protection and unemployment benefit rules for older workers, and setting wages based on productivity and competences rather than age. They also stressed the need to implement initiatives that would provide guidance on work organisation, training, health measures and working time policies to the changed capacities of older age workers. And finally, they spoke about promoting the employability of workers, which includes things like facilitating access to lifelong learning, improving working conditions and job quality at all ages, and limiting the risks of long-term joblessness. So this is a devil of a problem, and our political leaders appear to prefer to muddle on rather than face up to the significant issues ahead. In fact, I think the key is to stop thinking about retirement as suddenly something which kicks in at a set age, and rather think of it as a change of working patterns over time as we age. For example, in my own case, I continue to work as I approach my mid-60s, but working on stuff I really enjoy doing, and I continue to build my video production and financial analytics skills. In fact, I would personally hate not to have DFA to occupy my mind, as I think it helps to keep my mind and body active and alert. But then, perhaps, I'm one of the lucky ones. And Credit Suisse is right to say that we need to reconsider the way we look at retirement and the collective effort required to ensure an equitable and sustainable future for all. But this is a complex, multifaceted issue, and one which typically governments prefer to hedge around. Why would it be different this time? I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.